everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pillar Talk, where we build the foundations of sales leadership success, create clarity in terms of what good looks like for current and aspiring sales leaders. Before we jump in, I always like to do a quick review of the six pillars of successful sales leadership. Sometimes we talk about hiring. One of the most core foundational elements of being a leader is building the team. Today, we are going to focus on operating rhythm, establishing an environment that fosters motivation, engagement, and accountability. Other pillars include business planning, which is being on the front foot, making decisions that are going to impact the business in the future instead of reacting to events on the ground. Mastering the craft, which is around coaching and developing and helping the team win. Communication and all the mediums and personas that are involved in that. And then ownership. But today we are going to dig into operating rhythm. And today I am very fortunate to have Kyle Norton with us. Kyle is the CRO of owner.com. Kyle is frequently seen on the socials, including LinkedIn, dropping advice and knowledge for our overall tech community. Before Kyle was at Owner, he had led sales leadership roles at Shopify, League, other businesses. Kyle is somebody that has a lot of experience within the realm of the topics that we're going to be speaking about. So Kyle, thank you very much for joining me on Pillar Talk today.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
So Kyle, when we were prepping for our discussion here, I had inquired about which of the pillars resonated the most with you or was a superpower in some way, and you selected operating rhythm. I'd love to just ask, like, why operating rhythm? Why would that be top of mind for you?
For me, so our definition of operating rhythm is the set of standards that we use to help us know we can hit targets today and in the future. So it's a slight combination of my definition and my framework. It's a slight combination of two things in yours. This notion of, can you see around the corner? And this notion of, what is the operating rhythm that keeps your team on track week over week, day over day, to be able to deliver every month and every quarter. And it's near and dear to my heart because I think it determines so much of our success as sales leaders. And especially it's important for me to teach frontline managers this craft because it's so different than being a rep. You don't have to think too far into the future as a rep, but if you can nail great operating rhythms, it gives you the ability to deliver today, deliver tomorrow, not get surprised by things. And it's, you know, really the foundation for the team to be successful. And not having these things nailed has like bit me previously in my career. So it's like I have some good painful lessons to share and some successes more recently as well.
Now you've been a sales leader now for a long time and have probably developed a structure that works for, you know, now your current role. But I'd love to start with, you know, when you went into sales leadership and now you are responsible for the day-to-day runnings of the team. What were some of the early lessons learned or maybe even mistakes made that you had sort of referenced earlier that was the most educational to how to form a successful operating rhythm today?
Yeah, nothing educates you more viscerally than missing your number. And so as a newer second line leader, I think the thing that really caught me by surprise was headcount planning and this idea that if you're not bench building, if you don't know what headcount and pipeline you need to hit future numbers, you know, months and quarters in advance, your ability to react in time is very limited. So like the example is, you know, my number was going to escalate from quarter to quarter. I was thinking about delivering on the quarter that we were in. I had the headcount pipeline to do it. And by the time my eyes were looking forward a quarter, I started to realize, oh, we need 25% more pipeline. We need more BDRs to generate that pipeline to get there. And then you do the math. You're like, okay, well, a BDR hiring cycle, if you don't have a good bench built, is, you know, it could be 6 weeks. They give 2 weeks notice, then they get ramped for a couple weeks. And then all of a sudden, like from the time you realize that you need those people to generate the pipeline to hit the following quarter, you're out of time. You're like 6 weeks or 8 weeks too late. That was a painful lesson to miss a number early in my career and just feel helpless. You know, you can try to pull all the the heroics you want, but sometimes just without the foundations in place, you don't really have a hope. And so that was a lesson that I was like, okay, what's the cadence of reminders and what's the system I need in place to make sure that I never get caught by surprise a quarter, like one quarter out, two quarters out, you know, as you get more senior, as your business grows, I need to think, I'm already thinking about the 2025 number today. And so that was a lesson in the school of hard knocks for sure.
So you were in a situation where there was high ambition or high growth, you know, expectation embedded within the business.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't partnership as it related to modeling out what quota capacity needs to be quarter to quarter over time. You were sort of on your own to figure out what that was. And next thing you know, yeah, you don't have the capacity or the team to be able to do that. Is that sort of a accurate reflection of what the situation was?
Yeah, exactly. And so sometimes you're going to have great finance partners on it. This was an environment where we didn't have that infrastructure really. And so we were too month to month focused and didn't sort of understand the roadmap. And so got caught by surprise. By the time we reacted to it, it was too late and we missed.
And so now today you are operating more in a cadence of, you know, modeling out for, you know, even a year out around expected attrition, expected headcount, ramp period. I think that's one of the things that I've always had to coach others within the organization on, is that the hire date is really the beginning of an extended period of ramp. So getting to full quota allocation is going to vary, depend on the, you know, speed of transaction and complexity of solution. But, you know, the day somebody is hired, they're not on quota. There's going to be a period of time before they are impactful or productive.
Yeah, exactly. And now in my role, as we think, you know, as the scope is much broader and I have to think in much longer timelines, part of it is like channel bets. You know, how far can we take our core channels of inbound demand gen motion plus an outbound motion? Do we need a channel motion, a partner motion? Do we need to be thinking about self-serve to open up new parts of the market? Like, how are we going to be saturating our core SOM, serviceable obtainable market? And do we need to do things today? Because, you know, say it's self-serve, that's a 6 to 9 month product build potentially. And so my job is to help the company understand and to think through, all right, we're trying to go from 16 to 40 this year, and then we want to go 40 to 80 next year. Okay, 40 to 80 is a whole new ball game. Like, we can get to the number this year based on basically doing what we've done, but more. Next year, okay, maybe doing the same things will have diminishing returns, and we need to think about other big bets. So we're making big channel bets. We're making bets in other areas that will, and you need to make multiple because not all are going to pay off. But how do you think ahead? And so what are the rhythms? So now that's an annual rhythm, but then we have a quarterly rhythm to ensure that we've got headcount in place, pipeline is there, we're interlocked properly with other teams. Then we've got monthly and weekly rhythms. You know, the motions of an SMB business are very transactional. So do you have daily rhythms to make sure that you're not a day goes by when you're not producing the pipeline that you need for your reps to be closing or your launch team to be launching customers? So there's like a whole cascade of these things, from the annual things I do at an executive level to the daily things that the managers are doing with those ICs.
Yeah. And so pivoting to how that impacts the relationship and the interactions with the team itself, one of the things that's fascinating about going from an individual contributor to a leadership position is the context is entirely now changed. Whereas before, mm-hmm. you have a direct impact on the success of your career or on the success of what you're being measured on. Like, I have a pipeline, I close deals, I attain my target or don't attain it or exceed it. Now I am put into a context of having to depend on others to do it, an entirely different skill set. And now the work that needs to be done here is to foster a set of interactions, a clear set of expectations, and even daily rhythms, you know, everything in between, that creates an environment where, you know, folks are motivated, they're accountable, they're, you know, love going to work every day. As you reflect back in the early days of leadership, what was that experience like for you, where you now are managing people and you've got to create an infrastructure and an environment for them to thrive in.
Yeah. So I got thrown into leadership like really early in my career. I was only a sales rep for a year, and it was just right place, right time. I started selling in the great financial crisis. Mm. The company laid off a bunch of people. Then we were scaling again, and we only promoted managers from within. So I was there, you know, I was a top rep. I was a systems oriented thinker. And so I was the right person, even though I was like far too young for the job. And so I had had some reps in an environment that was like sort of a boiler room, basically a boiler room, and without a ton of sophistication. My real education was moving into the technology world and moving into an enterprise technology company where I ran a BDR function. That was a totally different approach. And thinking about enterprise sales cycles, enterprise timeline and planning a business of like a completely different magnitude. And was, you know, it was a fairly rude awakening in a lot of ways, but also just like massively exhilarating because that's what I wanted. I wanted a really exciting challenge. And so I just went to school. Like I just read a ton. Sales Acceleration Formula was like one of those really formative books in my early like software leadership career. I remember reading Predictable Revenue, which still was like fairly new at the time. And then eventually Impossible to Inevitable by Lemkin and Ross. Like, you know, I just studied as much as I could to figure things out, figure out the basics, and got to a place where, you know, had the foundations built and then had to learn a new set of foundations when I got my first VP of sales role, for example. So for me, it's always just about like going to school and just learning.
And when you moved, like, hey, you took on the challenge of going into sales development, you now have a team. I mean, how big of a team are we talking about here?
I think I only inherited like 18 people at first. Some of the global teams didn't roll into me like immediately. And then I got the North American team sorted and then absorbed the rest of the global BDRs. So we were I had about 30 folks by the end of my time at Vision Critical. Managing global teams is a whole other basket of problems.
But the key point here is that, you know, you're now in an environment where you can't have a direct one-to-one impact on every mm-hmm. individual because you don't scale times 18 or times 30. And so now you've got to create an environment that fosters the ability for folks on the team to do good work. So you're certainly reading about best practices and, you know, organizational construction and business dynamics that can enable that is helpful. But what was maybe a lesson learned as you now have a big team for the first time that you can't be, you know, managing at a one-to-one level? You now got to help that happen at scale.
Yeah.
I love the stories of like, oh boy, this is going to be hard if I try to like motivate each person individually.
Yeah. The big lesson at Vision Critical was how to monitor at scale. So It was the most sophisticated RevOps instance that I had been a part of. And it was still a little bit of a mess. Like this guy, Navin, who's now at 1Password, had recently joined to fix it all. But like we were sort of figuring out the basics, but at least I had the infrastructure to be able to monitor and manage things across the entire team from a set of dashboards. And I'd never had that ability early in my career. We never had the technology in place to do it. And so early, like I remember creating this thing called the lead audit sheet. And it was just like a big checklist of all the things that you could audit with respect to is somebody successful or not. And so it would have things like lead relevance, freshness. So like, is it the relevant title? Is it senior enough? Is there the right seniority? Are the leads fresh? Are the leads being worked by the team? Have they been in cadence for like 3 weeks? Freshness. Is it the right accounts? Is it the right titles? And you could go all the way down and then say, okay, and then what's the rep execution? Are they getting people on the phone? What are their conversion rates from phone to booking, from booking to hold? And that was like the big thing that was an eye opener for me in my Vision Critical experience, is just having that system in place to know what I'm looking at every single day. And I built a little routine for myself. I got in early to the office before anybody, and I just had like an hour where I would just creep dashboards, and then I would ping the managers that needed a heads up on stuff. Hey, you know, this person has too few leads in cadence. This person's conversion rates have been dropped off. And so I was able to monitor with a lot of scale before the managers could really do it with a high degree of competence. And then eventually I could give them that system. And I think that's the operating rhythm. That's the secret sauce to operating rhythms is, you know, what's the system that you can give to your frontline leaders so that they can execute almost as well as you can execute because you've like built them those foundations.
So it starts with the data.
Yeah.
It starts with, you know, when you have a larger team, what are the metrics or the variables that I want to monitor that will give me an indication of whether we're tracking towards success or lack thereof?
And is it documented clearly?
In this particular case, were those variables predetermined? And so you walked in and you're like, oh my gosh, these dashboards are incredible.
No,
I'm literally getting what I need. Or was there a lot of collaboration to determine what do we need to measure that it would be a leading indicator that will help us know early if we're on track or not?
No, it was a nightmare. Like, so this is how early it was in sort of the BDR role coming to prominence. The BDRs reported directly to the AEs that they supported. So the AE was the manager. There were no BDR managers. And seems crazy now, but at the time, like, you know, the people were just learning how to use this BDR model. And so I had to consolidate a bunch of it. I did learn how to use Salesforce and teach myself the basics. And I was building the reporting from scratch. Luckily, Navin was there too as a collaborator. And then he was building a bunch of stuff, but he was also trying to rebuild the foundation of Salesforce because it wasn't in a great spot. So no, it was like a complete scratch build. So let's fast forward to owner. So that was me figuring it out and just like putting it together with duct tape and bubble gum. And so now at owner, we've got sort of a cascading set of things that we do. And I won't touch as much on the motivation part of it. Let's just focus on accountability and just like the ability for a manager to know, are they going to be able to deliver what they need to deliver? So at the beginning of every month, we do the math. And you're sort of doing this on an ongoing basis. Do you have the reps, the marketing pipeline, the people in place, if the win rates and the volumes add up to where it needs to be? Like, do you have that all in place to bring to get the output? Again, we're SMB high velocity, so most deals that close in a month are generated in month. So do you have those basics in place? Okay, yes. Then what's the math that the manager individually shares with the rep? So they do their math of sales. The rep picks their target. I want to do 25 squos and 10 close wins. Okay, and what sort of pre-squo pipeline are you coming in with? What are your conversion rates from the previous month? Okay, then what does that tell you about the volume of leads you need to be putting into Cadence every day and the volumes of calls? So this gives the autonomy to the rep to basically pick their number and work through the math of them deciding, not like, hey, Rick, I need you to do 50, 70, 100 calls a day. The rep is actually getting agency and accountability to do that work. So that's sort of like the setup mechanism. And then every day, then the managers have sets of dashboards to know, all right, based on where their reps want to get to, are we getting the right numbers of dials, decision maker connects? Is that leading to ops? And we have a daily rhythm, like midway through the day, every manager knows they should be checking in on their core dashboards to make sure that we're trending to deliver on it. Because, you know, like Monday after Super Bowl, or it's the Friday before a long weekend, in an SMB business, effort matters a lot. And so if the manager is like not on top of it, you can easily just like cruise through a day as a sales rep. Like they need that buddy system of their manager saying, hey, Rick, all right, like we got 6 decision maker connects this morning. Like we gotta like crank it up. So let's do a call block. What do you need? Do you want fresh leads? And they can like quickly problem solve. And sometimes it's just a nudge, especially in a remote environment. Sometimes it's just like the nudge, like, hey, I see you. Like, you know what you're supposed to be doing. Like, let's go. That's sometimes in like that daily rhythm, like our operating rhythms. Like, we have a massive spreadsheet that has monthly, weekly, quarterly, daily rhythms. And then those all go into the calendar, like the manager's calendar or my calendar, depending on who owns it, so that they have those sets of reminders and prompts to like do the right things and things don't get dropped. That's the operating system, is like that reminder system.
Yeah. And in a high velocity business, the frequency in which you're checking these metrics is multiple times per day because you need full tilt execution happening, you know, every hour matters, you know, in this area.
I wouldn't encourage you to check in daily with your enterprise reps on their dials.
I mean, it's a little slightly different dynamic.
Not the right case.
Well, I think that's one of the fascinating things, Kyle, is like in every business, there is a set of data points that are going to have a leading indicator impact on the success of business. Certainly in a higher complexity sale, you know, the frequency in which you would check those might not be the same, but they might be very different. And there are some elements that you could probably check regularly. An example might be, you know, the number of contacts within a Fortune 100 organization that we have two-way interaction with in the last 2 weeks. And if we're not working with a large number of people, then our odds of success within that opportunity are, you know, very much at risk because, you know, we don't know who our enemies are and what's happening behind the scenes, or, you know, just like as an example, which might not be a metric in an SMB business that we would ever look at. Like, we're trying to get to a deal closed and get on, you know, new opportunities in the pipeline and keep the machine moving.
Yeah. The systems are the same. The time horizons are just different.
Yeah. And the variables might be a bit different as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I think one tactic that I sort of heard in your narrative there is around sort of a manager nudge. That's like, hey, you know what you're supposed to be doing, like saw on the dashboard, what's up? Like, let's get to it kind of thing. What are other tactics you've seen to be effective in sustaining motivation or engagement, I should say, you know, at the rep level, you know, as distractions come through, we're in a remote world. The Super Bowl is, you know, coming up on Sunday, if that, you know, if we're almost, you know, just past that time of year, but you know, you get the idea. Like, what are ways that you use as the senior leader in the organization to kind of keep everybody going?
Yeah. So I have a set of my own nudges, and I'm looking at slightly different dashboards. And so like high level performance management is a big one. So every month I'm looking at things and I'll nudge the manager, hey, like, what's up with this rep? Like, you know, that's not really where we need it to be. Have you had the conversation? What do they need coaching wise? And sometimes the manager's like, yeah. That's like good catch. Like, I should have got that. So those nudges also cascade down. On the topic of motivation and engagement, I'm not really delivering that through the operating system as much. This is more the things that drive engagement in not in my opinion, but if you look at sort of the Gallup Q12 framework, which is sort of my favorite one, do people believe in the mission of your company? Are they attached to it? Do they feel like they can trust their manager and their senior leaders? Do they understand what's happening in the business? Do they feel like they can succeed in their job? Do they have an understanding, and do they feel like the organization is transparent and honest with them? So those are the things that drive engagement. And ultimately, like, are people learning and growing, and do they feel like they've got a career path at this company? I think, especially with sales reps, that's probably the biggest one. Can they get behind the mission, and do they feel like their career is moving? Because humans hate standing still. You know, this concept of hedonic adaption, whatever sort of level we get to, that's our new baseline. And if we're not moving forward from that baseline, we feel like we're moving backwards. And so the system that's most important there is like the coaching system. So for me, that's a separate pillar, but it's related, and having an operating rhythm to it is important. But is coaching happening every single week? So I'm like checking my manager's calendar. Like, do they have dedicated coaching sessions on top of their weekly one-on-ones, which are more problem solving, deal review, pipeline forecast? So are those booked? Do we have a cadence of training coming up? Do we know the topics we're digging into? Like, at the end of the year, it was like, call me in the new year. So everybody was focused on call me in the new year training, driving urgency as an example. Then do we know...
They told us to call them in the new year. And guess what, team? We're going to do it.
Yeah. And so, like, are those are the rhythms that I'm most concerned about, is the coaching rhythms. I look at Gong. Like, I go into Gong every single week and I look at the number of calls that the managers have viewed and listened to. That's like really informative of like the amount of coaching happening. So do I have those rhythms in place to ensure accountability that the coaching happens? Because if people feel like they're learning and growing and they're getting new skills, then they'll be reasonably happy in general. And then if you can promote from within, which we try to do really consistently, that's like 80% of the battle, I think.
What's your interaction with the individual contributors on the team look like? you know, you already have a management infrastructure. I imagine you want to spot check from the individual contributor perspective their feelings about those questions that you ask that foster motivation and engagement. Is that a mechanism that you'll use to kind of get a bottoms up view?
Yeah, skip levels for sure. Yeah. There's a bunch of reps that I know well and will Slack and just be like, hey, want to know about this? And, you know, we have a very transparent and feedback oriented culture. So it's not overstepping and the managers know that I'm going to do it. And so I'm getting feedback from the reps about their experience and they know if there's an issue that they can bring it to me. I've hired two new frontline managers and for them, I'm going to talk to their reps a bunch. Hey, like what's going on with Rick? Like, is he giving you what he needs? What feedback do you have for him that you should give to him directly and I should know about to help coach him along? That's a really important mechanism there. But it's reliant on this transparency culture. It's reliant on the understanding that feedback is a gift. Feedback is not a critique of you as an individual or it's a tool for us all to get better. And if that is there and everybody buys into that culture, then you'll get that feedback. You can reach out and ask for it pretty readily and it unlocks a lot.
I like the concept of a transparent culture. How does that manifest as it relates to, do you have like people's performance sort of advertised? Are there contests around it? You know,
yeah.
How have you balanced creating and fostering competition with, you know, trying to keep everybody's head in the game?
Yeah. So transparency goes top down. If your CEO is opaque, if your CRO is opaque, then everything is going to be sort of, and nothing's, the reps aren't going to buy into it. And so like, I'm going to give some tactical examples. So every month I write a review of the previous month and like a game plan for the following month. I do it for my own planning purposes. I do it to share with the executive team. And I take that exact same document and I share it with the entire organization. So it's a completely open document. I expect people to read it. And then I do an AMA where people can ask like literally anything and everything on those topics. And I'll answer everything. Like somebody's like, well, you know, I got asked about comp and I'll be like very transparent. Hey, comp has not changed since 2021 because that market was silly and we were overpaying. So congrats, you got overpaid, but like, you know, we're now just finding a new equilibrium. And I'll be that direct with folks because that's what they need to hear to sort of believe it. So all my planning is like totally public. My CEO, Adam, he asked for a bunch of feedback from his direct reports, the executive. He presented on an all hands the feedback that he had gotten. He only focused on the critical feedback because he just wanted to sort of prove a point. But if you can like demonstrate that transparency really starts from the top and funnels all the way down, we're very transparent with the financial metrics of the business, then your reps will reciprocate with it.
So can we just, to close out here, can we unpack your process for your review?
Yeah.
Because I think that's something powerful that I want to take away from this is, you know, being like taking the time to do an audit of, hey, how did we just do? And what does that mean for what we're going to do? You can imagine someone being maybe overwhelmed by that. Like, where do I start? So what's your approach, Kyle?
Yeah. So I can take you through the structure of the document and sort of how I lay it out. So it's called my like revenue review and game plan. I write it every month. So I'll do a review by the numbers. Okay. Here were the targets. Here were the results. Here were the conversion rates and anything that sort of sticks out in there we'll address. So there's conversion rates, launch rates, churn, basically top to bottom, everything is there. Then we do some.
And a bit of narrative behind it. So like the numbers are the numbers. Here's a little insight on it.
Yeah. Then I'll have some commentary on what I think went well, what didn't, and then some shout outs. Part of that document is recognizing some people. Then there's a section called strategic focus review. So it's basically a copy paste of my strategic plan from the previous month and an update on did we do those things? So I said we wanted to hire a new director for customer onboarding. Okay, that has a check mark on it. I give some details about it. And then And we didn't miss any, but like, if there's one that I've, like advancing this one partnership, we wanted, actually, we sort of missed this one. So like, we wanted to advance this partnership to a confirmed pilot. We couldn't get the meetings on the, a meeting on the books because people were at the partner were traveling. So it got delayed into this month. So it's like, hey, it's there because that was in the last month thing. I have commentary, good process, but key stakeholders couldn't get scheduled. Big meeting on the 14th, and then like some commentary of what we're trying to accomplish. And then now in the, so that's strategic focus review. Everything that I said we wanted to do that's important, I'd say red, yellow, green, whether or not we got it done. There's a section on what else we accomplished, because lots of times you'll do new stuff. You'll accomplish things outside of that, what you thought you were going to do.
That are worth mentioning.
That are worth mentioning, yeah. Other hiring, like we hired manager, like a manager that wasn't technically in the plan because it was opportunistic. So it's the numbers, the commentary, and then strategic focus review.
Yeah, I heard like, yeah, numbers, what went well, what didn't, some shout outs of particularly mm-hmm. awesome performance from your vantage point, or is it just purely on metrics?
No, the shout outs are, could be metrics. It could be somebody like open-ended. Helping a customer okay. or like, you know, building a training for the rest of the team.
Is that solely based on your observation, or are you collecting feedback in a structured way to do that?
Collecting. Yeah. From the managers. So the managers will pre-populate. I'll do a bit of an edit. I'll add, like I added a shout out to our marketing leader. That's like one from me. So it's a combination.
And then you had your last month, we need to accomplish these things. You give an update on that. Other things that we accomplished, keep going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, we said we wanted to do these things. Did we or did we not? Great account. Like, I'm being very public about my accountability to everybody. It's got to be red, yellow, or green. And then commentary on it. And then we get into next month. So what are the targets and what are the quotas? So we publish everybody's quotas in the same document. They're all the same by segment. And then the same strategic focus section. So strategic focus review for last month. And then the things that we want to say we want to do this month.
How many things do you allow on the max end for a month?
I don't have a rule of thumb there. It depends. Like, I'm in like the crazy thick of hiring right now. I think I'll have 20 hours of interviews like a week these days. And so the list of things that I'm going to ship is like fairly limited, but we hired an awesome enablement director. My RevOps leader is a beast. So like, there's actually a lot of things that are shipping that I'm like not doing myself, but I don't have a rule of thumb. But going through the process helps us prioritize.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, I mean, the fear there is that you have 10 things and then, you know, it's just really yeah. hard to stay on top of. And so how do you choose the few that'll have the biggest impact and then ensure you see that through?
Yeah. And that's a whole other part of the build pillar for me. So I've got a document that's a template for how we do projects. Mm. Problem to solve, this opportunity solution tree framework that I like.
There's a whole thing. How much of this put together is like an assembly line thing where, you know, RevOps can put the dashboards and the data, they provide that. The managers are, you know, submitting shout outs.
Very much so.
Is it very assembly line oriented?
Oh, yeah. Like there's a button, you press a button in our, we have a, what we call the leadership command center in Notion. You can create these like custom buttons in Notion. So I press a button and that pre-populates the monthly review template. All the sections, all the like, little bullets that we need to fill out. So it's like the close one number and then the attainment percentage. And then the what else you need to know section, sales process and operation. Like they're all, it's all sort of pre-laid out. And then I just start tagging people in the shout out section. And I normally do this like starting at 8 or 9 o'clock the night the month closes, and I ship it hopefully by the end of the next day. So it's like a sprint process because you don't know how the month's going to end necessarily. And then, so yeah, it's assembly line. And then we sort of frame out what's going to be in there. So then we're into next month. So targets, quotas, strategic focus, like these are the things we're going to say we need to do. And then we've got a section on like what you need to know. So as reps and, you know, customer onboarding folks, this is what you need to know is like changing. So we've got like a change log process. And then everybody's expected to review this one Notion page in the morning every single day where like critical updates go, but like big sweeping ones. So we changed our deal qualification rules, or if we changed comp plans or any of that, will go into like what you need to know. And if it's a big change, it gets a change log with a video with why did we make the change? What data did we use to make the decision? And like, why did we choose this option?
Yeah, as much context as you can give. And then the AMA happens how long after distribution?
A couple days.
Yeah, you give people at least a couple hours to read it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I normally ship it like on a Tuesday. It might be a Tuesday or Wednesday, and we do it on a Friday. The last part of that document is like ruminations. It's just my opportunity because I sit down and I think about the business and review all of this data and look at things. I'm always struck by something. It's like, I'm noticing this thing and there's a theme I want to call out. And so that's just like me talking. It's the ruminations section. And the rumination this month was this idea of escape velocity. It's like, hey, like we're at this point where the business is developing its own critical mass. Here's what escape velocity means. Here's what you need to know about like being a part of a company at this, like going through this and the rate of change and sort of our need to keep the foot on the pedal. And so that's the document. And that goes out every month.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that brings together a few of the points that we talked about here, which is like, if we're transparent with the team will be transparent with us. If we create an environment where people know what's expected of them, we measure it in the right way, we nudge it when necessary in terms of doing that, but we over communicate what's going on and then create a bunch of reinforcement mechanisms behind that. Like, I expect you read that document. I do an AMA, mm-hmm. Like, let's have it out. Whatever the questions are, bring it. We need to have a flow of two-way communication. I have a forcing mechanism here to force me to think through about what's important right now. I automate a decent amount of it so I have a quality product that can be distributed to the board all the way down to a new hire. Mm-hmm. But I have enough space in there for me to work individually to figure out, like, to think through writing and through communication. Mm-hmm. What we're going to do as a business. And my ripple effects from that should be people, we keep moving the ball forward. We get into that escape velocity, goal. I think that is a meaningful, tangible tactic. Now, you work in a large organization, so I don't necessarily think...
We're only 100 people.
But, 30 reps, people. You're moving high velocity. There's a lot of data stuff. Part of me feels like you share that because you see the future and the organization's going to be a heck of a lot bigger than it is now. Fair enough. Yeah. My point is solely for anybody out there, like that discipline of self-reflection from the senior sales leader's point of view or from the functional leader's point of view, it could be any department around how do we do against our metrics, whatever those are, sales metrics, maybe a bit easier to measure. Yeah. What went well? What didn't? What are we shouting out? Hey, what was the things I said were important and did we do those things? Self-accountability at a leadership level, not just expecting it from the bottom up. And what's going on in the future? What do you need to know? And ruminations, like what a great framework any leader can use in the frequency that's relevant to their business. Monthly maybe is a great starting point, but from weekly to quarterly, like what a great tactic that can immediately upskill all these different ripple effects within there. So I'm going to close out on that item there, Kyle.
Yeah. If you're not doing a monthly review of performance and every little metric in the business with a lot of detail, and we've also got like a monthly business review, which is like a much more detailed look at the numbers that RevOps runs, and it's for the leadership group. We also publish that to the team. But if you're not doing that monthly review, you'll just keep getting surprised by stuff. Things will always catch you off guard because you're not creating time and space for this like deliberate work. And here are a couple of the keys. One is book that time at the beginning of the month. Go into your calendar, block out. Because if you try to book if I'm trying to book this time a week out, there's no time in my calendar. So I book like a 3-hour block in my calendar multiple weeks out that people can't touch because I'm writing this. Like, so one is block it out. Two is build yourself a template. So in general, my heuristic here is like, if I can spend 50 or 100% more time doing this the first time to make it 50% easier for the next 50 times, I'm going to spend the time up front. And if people want, like I can publish this template. You can put it in the podcast notes. Like I'll give folks a public version of this that they can use. So book the time, commit to it, build yourself a template for it. And third, send it to everybody. Like there's no better accountability forcing function to make accountability part of your environment than sharing this with the entire organization. And it's uncomfortable at first. I don't even think about it now, but it's uncomfortable at first, but like it has a magic effect. People really, people comment on this all the time with me. They're just like so appreciative that we share this much. So that's the thought I would leave people with on it.
Kyle, I love it. I can't wait to forward you my month-end reflection to get your feedback so I can iterate and get better on my first one. Because this isn't one I'm leaning into right away. The whole purpose of this podcast and Pillar Talk is to identify these types of tactics and best practices and to put them to use. So Kyle, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it. And what an awesome discussion.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Rick. This was great.
Reflecting back on the conversation with the amazing Kyle Norton that we just had, you can tell what a great systems thinker Kyle is, and he has so much wisdom to share. The first one, when I reflect on the metrics and the velocity in which Kyle knows exactly the type of data that he wants to look at and how to use that data as a management function to keep the whole organization, especially in a larger one, moving in the right direction towards revenue. So the takeaway for all of us is really clear determination with our cross-functional partners on the leading indicator metrics that are going to matter to the success of the business, and finding the medium and the frequency with which to distribute that information, whether it be a dashboard or a report, and to consistently use it as a management tool for your business. So some businesses have a higher velocity and need to do it with more frequency. Some might be a more enterprise selling motion and need to do it with less frequency. The variables themselves will be dependent upon the context of the business, but determining with your cross-functional peers what those are, creating the distribution mechanism and the frequency of review, turning that into a management tool, really impactful takeaway that I'm going to start enacting within my organization. Second takeaway for me is around transparency and creating a culture of, you know, motivation and engagement and continuous improvement. The story that Kyle shared around the CEO taking the feedback that was received from direct reports, sharing that with the entire organization and using that as a tool to make it okay for each individual of the organization to reflect, to seek help on how to improve, and for it to be okay to, you know, have that type of relationship with a manager to seek continuous improvement. That transparency starts from the top down. So us as leaders, when we make ourselves vulnerable, when we share our own journey in our spirit of how we want to improve our impact into an organization, the positive ripple effects from that could be dramatic. And the third takeaway for me is around what Kyle shared around accountability through communication. That monthly review that Kyle puts together is an amazing forcing mechanism to keep him accountable. And to me, not only is that a wonderful tool as a leader, you want to make sure you're making the difference and you're making an impact and you're not reacting to events as they unfold and continuing to fight the next fire and not be proactive in driving success for the organization. That mechanism is probably contagious throughout the org. Every single employee in a company can take that same approach to reflect on the key goals for them as an individual or for their department over the next month, reflect on, did we get those things done? Maybe provide some shout outs for who helped them achieve goals that were met, and then use it as a tool for what are the important items that we want to get done in the next month. All of us can benefit from that. And I can imagine a world where Kyle, as the leader, modeling that behavior will have positive ripple effects within the org as well. So some great tactical takeaways that we can enact as leaders. I want to thank Kyle again for joining. I want to thank Wayfair Production for producing, Sons of Summer for the great music. And all of you, thank you for listening to another episode of Pillar Talk. We will see you next time. Have a great one.